so shaken as we are, so worn with care, find we a time for frighted peace to pant, and breathe short-winded accents of new broils to be commenced in strands of far remote. No more the thirsty entrance of this soil shall daub her lips with her own children's blood. No more shall trenching war channel her fields, nor bruise her flowerets with the armed hooves of hostile paces. Those opposed eyes, which, like the meteors of a troubled heaven, all of one nature, of one substance bred, did lately meet in the intestine shock and furious close of civil butchery, shall now, in mutual, well-beseeming ranks, march all one way, and be no more opposed against acquaintance, kindred, and allies. The edge of war, like an ill-sheathed knife, no more shall cut his master. Therefore, friends, as far as to the sepulcher of Christ, whose soldier now, under whose blessed cross we are impressed and engaged to fight, forthwith the power of English shall we levy, whose arms were molded in their mother's womb to chase these pagans in those holy fields, over whose acres walked those blessed feet, which 1400 years ago were nailed for our advantage on the bitter cross. But this, our purpose, now is 12 months old, and bootless 'tis to tell you we will go. Therefore, we meet not now. Then let me hear of you, my gentle cousin Westmoreland, what yesternight our council did decree in forwarding this dear expedience.
My liege, this haste was hot in question, and many limits of the charge set down but yesternight, when all athwart there came a post from Wales loaden with heavy news, whose worst was that the noble Mortimer, leading the men of Herefordshire to fight against the irregular and wild Glendower, was by the rude hands of that Welshman taken, 1,000 of his people butchered, upon whose dead corpse there was such misuse, such shameless, beastly transformation by those Welsh women done, as may not be without much shame retold or spoken of.
It seems, then, that the tidings of this broil break off our business for the Holy Land.
This, matched with other, did, my gracious lord. For more uneven and unwelcome news came from the north, and thus it did import. On Holy Rood Day, the gallant Hotspur there, young Harry Percy, and brave Archibald, that ever valiant and approved Scot, at Holmdon met, where they did spend a sad and bloody hour, as by discharge of their artillery and shape of likelihood the news was told. For he that brought them in the very heat and pride of their contention did take horse, uncertain of the issue anyway.
Here is a dear, a true, industrious friend, Sir Walter Blunt, new lighted from his horse, stained with the variation of each soil betwixt that Holmdon and this seat of ours. And he hath brought us smooth and welcome news. The Earl of Douglas is discomfited. 10,000 bold Scots, 22 knights, balked in their own blood, did Sir Walter see on Holmdon's plains. Of prisoners, Hotspur took Mordek, Earl of Fife, and eldest son to beaten Douglas, and the Earl of Athol, of Murray, Angus, and Menteith. And is not this an honorable spoil? A gallant prize? Ha, cousin, is it not?
Indeed, it is a conquest for a prince to boast of.
Yea, there thou makest me sad, and makes me sin in envy that my lord Northumberland should be the father to so blessed a son. A son who is the theme of honor's tongue. Amongst a grove, the very straightest plant, who is sweet fortune's minion and her pride, whilst I, by looking on the praise of him, see riot and dishonor stain the brow of my young Harry. Oh, that it could be proved that some night-tripping fairy had in cradle clothes exchanged our children where they lay and called mine Percy, his Plantagenet. Then would I have his Harry, and he mine. But let him from my thoughts. What think you, cuz, of this young Percy's pride? The prisoners which he in this adventure hath surprised, to his own use he keeps, and sends me word I shall have none but Mordek, Earl of Fife.
This is his uncle's teaching. This is Worcester, malevolent to you in all aspects, which makes him prune himself and bristle up the crest of youth against your dignity.
But I have sent for him to answer this. And for this cause a while, we must neglect our holy purpose to Jerusalem. Cousin, on Wednesday next, our council we will hold at Windsor, so inform the lords. But come yourself with speed to us again, for more is to be said and to be done than out of anger can be uttered.
What time of day is it, lad?
Thou art so fat-witted and drinking of old sack. Buttoning thee after supper. Sleeping upon benches afternoon, that thou hast forgotten to demand that truly which thou wouldest truly know. What the devil hast thou to do with the time of the day? And there's hours for cups of sack, and minutes capons.
Clocks the tongues of boards. Dials the signs of leaping houses. And the blessed stun himself, a fair hot wench and flame-coloured taffeta. I see no reason why thou should be so superfluous to demand the time of the day.
Indeed, you come near me now, Hal, for we that take purses go by the moon and the seven stars, and not by Phoebus. He, that wandering knight so fair. And I prithee, sweet wag, when thou art king, as God save thy grace, majesty, I should say, for grace thou'lt have none.
What?
None? No, by my troth, not so much as will serve to be a prologue to an egg and butter.
Come now,
marry, sweet wag, when thou art king, let not us that are squires of the knight's body be called thieves of the day's beauty. Let us be called, Diana's foresters, gentlemen of the shade, minions of the moon.
Thou sayest well. And it holds well, too. For the fortune of us that are the moon's men doth ebb and flow like the sea, being governed as the sea is by the moon. As for proof now, a purse of gold most resolutely snatched on Monday night and most dissolutely spent on Tuesday morning. Now in as low an ebb as the foot of the ladder, and by and by as high a flow as the ridge of the gallows.
By the Lord, thou says true, Hal, but I'll put this sweet wag. Shall there be gallows standing in England when thou art king? And a resolution as fubbed as it is with a rusty curb of old Father Antic, the law, do not thou, when thou art a king, hang a thief.
No, thou shalt.
Shall I? Oh, well. Oh, by the Lord, I'll be a brave judge.
Thou judgest false already. I mean that thou shalt have the hanging of thieves and so become a rare hangman.
Some sort of jumps with my humour, as well as waiting in the court, I can tell you.
For obtaining of suits?
For obtaining of suits, whereof the hangman hath no lean wardrobe. Blood, I'm as melancholy as a jib cat, or a lugged bear.
Or an old lion, or a lover's lute.
Or the drone of a Lincolnshire bagpipe.
What says thou to a hare, or the melancholy of Moorditch?
Thou hast the most unsavoury similes. And art indeed the most comparative, rascally, sweet young prince. I prithee, Hal, trouble me no more with vanity. I would to God, thou and I knew where a commodity of good names were to be bought. An old lord of the council rated me the other day in the street about you, sir. But I marked him not. And yet he talked very wisely. But I regarded him not. And yet he talked wisely. And in the street, too.
Thou didst well. For wisdom cries out in the street, and no man regards it.
Oh, thou hast damnable iteration, and art indeed able to corrupt a saint. Thou hast done much harm upon me. How God forgive thee? Oh, before I knew thee, I knew nothing. And now am I, if a man were to speak truly, little better than one of the wicked. Well, I must give over this life. And I will give it over. By the Lord, and I do not, I'm a villain. I'll be damned for never a king's son in Christendom.
Where shall we take a purse tomorrow, Jan?
As soon as well, I will glad. I'll make one. And I do not call me villain, baffle me.
I see a good amendment of life in thee, from praying to purse-taking.
Well, 'tis my vocation. 'Tis no sin for a man to labor in his vocation. Point. Now shall we know if Peter have set a match. Oh, if man were to be saved by merit, what hole in hell were hot enough for him?
Yeah. Good morrow, Ned.
Good morrow, sweet hell. But what says Monsieur Remorse? What says Sir John Sack and Sugar? Jack, how agrees the devil in thee about thy soul, that thou soldst him on Good Friday last for a cup of Madeira and a cold capon's leg?
Oh, Sir John stands to his word. He will give the devil his due.
Then art thou damned for keeping thy word with the devil?
Hasn't he been damned for cousining the devil?
And my lads. Yes. Tomorrow morning by 4 o'clock early at Gad's Hill, there are pilgrims going to Canterbury with rich offerings and traders riding to London with fat purses. I have visors for you all. You have horses for yourselves. Peter lies tonight in Rochester. I have bespoke supper tomorrow night in Eastcheap. We shall do it as secure as sleep. If you will go, I will stuff your purses full of crowns. If you will not, tarry at home and be hanged.
Yeah, but if I tarry at home and go not, I'll hang you for going.
You will, chops.
Hell, wilt thou make one?
Who? I, Rob? I, a thief? Not I, by my faith.
There's neither honesty, manhood, nor good fellowship in thee. Nor thou kimst not of the blood royal if thou darest not stand for 10 shillings.
Sir John, I prithee, leave the prince and me alone. I will lay him down such reasons for this adventure that he shall go.
Well, God give thee the spirit of persuasion and him the ears of profiting, that what thou speaks may move and what he hears may be believed, that the true prince may, for recreation's sake, prove a false thief for the poor abuses of the Taiwan countenance. Farewell, you shall find me in Eastcheap.
Farewell, thou latter spring. Farewell, all hallowed summer.
Farewell.
Now, my good, sweet honey-law, ride with us tomorrow. I have a jest to execute that I cannot manage alone. Falstaff, Bardolph, and Peto shall rob those men that we have already waylaid. Yourself and I shall not be there. And when they have the booty, if you and I do not rob them, then cut this head off from my shoulders.
Well, how shall we part with them in setting forth?
Why, we will set forth before or after them.
Well, it is like that they will know us by our horses, by our habits, by every other appointment to be ourselves.
But our horses they shall not see. I'll tie them in the wood. Our visors we will change after we leave them. And, sirrah, I have cases of buckram for the nonce to immask our noted outward garments.
Yeah, but I doubt they will be too hard for us.
Well, for two of them, I know them to be as true-bred cowards as ever turned back. And as for the third, if he fight longer than he sees reason, I'll forswear arms. The virtue of this jest shall be the incomprehensible lies this same fat rogue will tell when we meet at supper. How 30 at least he fought with, what wards, what blows, what extremities he endured. And in the reproof of this lives the jest.
Well, I will go with thee. Provide us all things necessary. Meet me tomorrow night in Eastcheap. There I'll sup. Farewell.
Farewell, my lord. I know you all.
And will a while uphold the unyoked humor of your idleness. Herein will I imitate the sun. He doth permit the base, contagious clouds to smother up his beauty from the world. That when he please again to be himself, being wanted, he may be more wondered at by breaking through the foul and ugly mists of vapors that did seem to strangle him. If all the year were playing holidays, the sport would be as tedious as to work. When they seldom come, they wished for come. Nothing pleaseth but rare accidents. So, when this loose behavior I throw off and pay the debt I never promise it, by how much better than my word I am, by so much shall I falsify men's hopes. And like bright metal on a sullen ground, my reformation, glittering on my fault, shall show more goodly and attract more eyes than that which hath no foil to set it off. Also offend to make offense a skill, redeeming time when men think least I will.
My blood hath been too cold and temperate, unapt to stir at these indignities. And you have found me, for accordingly you tread upon my patience. But be sure, I will from henceforth rather be myself, mighty and to be feared, than my condition, which hath been smooth as oil, soft as young down, and therefore lost that title of respect which the proud soul ne'er pays but to the proud.
Our house, my sovereign liege, little deserves the scourge of greatness to be used on it. That same greatness, too, which our own hands have helped to make so portly.
Lord Buster, get thee gone! For I do see danger and disobedience in thine eye. Oh, sir, your presence is too bold and peremptory, and majesty might never yet endure the moody frontier of a servant brow. You have good leave to leave us. When we need your use and counsel, we shall send for you. You were about to speak.
Nay, my lord. Those prisoners in your highness' name demanded, which Harry Percy here at Holmdon took, were, as he says, not with such strength denied as is delivered to your majesty, either envy, therefore, or misprision is guilty of this fault, and not my son.
My liege, I did deny no prisoners. But I remember when the fight was done, when I was dry with rage and extreme toil, breathless and faint, leaning upon my sword, came there a certain lord, neat and trimly dressed, fresh as a bridegroom, and his chin new reaped showed like a stubble land at harvest home. He was perfumed like a milliner. And twixt his finger and his thumb he held a pouncet box, which ever and anon he gave his nose and took away again, who therewith angry when it next came there, took it in snuff. And still he smiled and talked. And as the soldiers bore dead bodies by, he called them untaught knaves, unmannerly to bring a slovenly, unhandsome course betwixt the wind and his nobility. With many holiday and lady terms, he questioned me. Amongst the rest, demanded my prisoners in your majesty's behalf. I then, all smarting with my wounds being cold, to be so pestered with a popinjay, out of my grief and my impatience, answered neglectingly, I know not what he should or he should not. For he made me mad to see him shine so brisk and smell so sweet and talk so like a waiting gentlewoman of guns and drums and wounds. God save the mark. And telling me the sovereignest thing on earth was palmaceutic. For an inward bruise? And that it was great pity, so it was, this villainous saltpeter should be digged out of the bowels of the harmless earth, which many a good tall fellow had destroyed so cowardly. And but for these vile guns, he would himself have been a soldier. This bald, unjointed chat of his, my lord, I answered indirectly. As I said, and I beseech you, let not his report come current for an accusation betwixt my love and your high majesty.
The circumstance considered, good my lord. Whate'er Lord Harry Percy then had said to such a person and in such a place at such a time and all the rest retold may reasonably die and never rise to do him wrong or any way impeach what then he said. So he unsay it now.
Why, yet he doth deny his prisoners. But with proviso and exception, that we at our own charge shall ransom straight his brother-in-law, the foolish Mortimer, who on my soul hath willfully betrayed the lives of those that he did lead to fight against that great magician, damned Glendower, whose daughter, as we hear, that Mortimer hath lately married.
Shall our coffers then be emptied to redeem a traitor home? Shall we buy treason and indent with fears when they have lost and forfeited themselves? No. On the barren mountains let him starve. For I shall never hold that man my friend, whose tongue shall ask me for one penny cost to ransom home revolted Mortimer.
Revolted Mortimer?
He never did fall off my sovereign liege, but by the chance of war. To prove that true needs but one tongue for all those wounds, those mouthed wounds which valiantly he took, when on the gentle Severn, Sedgybank, in single opposition, hand to hand, he did confound the best part of an hour in changing hardiment with great Glendower. Three times they breathed, and three times did they drink upon agreement of swift Severn's flood, who then affrighted with their bloody looks, ran fearfully among the trembling reeds and hid his crisp head in the hollow bank, blood stained with those valiant combatants. Never did base and rotten policy color her working with such deadly wounds. Nor never could the noble Mortimer receive so many, and all willingly. Then let him not be slandered with revolt.
Thou dost belie him, Percy. Thou dost belie him. He never did encounter with Glendower. I tell thee, he durst as well have met the devil alone as owing Glendower for an enemy. Art thou not ashamed? But, sirrah, henceforth let me not hear you speak of Mortimer. Send me your prisoners with the speediest means, or you shall hear in such a kind from me as will displease you. My Lord Northumberland, we license your departure with your son. Send us your prisoners, or you will hear of it.
And if the devil come and roar for them, I will not send them. I will after straight and tell him, for I will ease my heart, albeit I make a hazard of my head.
What? Drunk with colour? Stay and pause a while.
Here comes your uncle.
Speak of Mortimer. Zounds, I will speak of him. And let my soul want mercy if I do not join with him. There, on his part, I'll empty all these veins and shed my dear blood drop by drop in the dust. But I will lift the noble Mortimer as high in the air as this unthankful king, as this ingrate and cankered Bolingbroke.
Brother, the king hath made your nephew mad.
Who struck this heat up after I was gone?
He will, forsooth, have all my prisoners. When I urged the ransom once again of my wife's brother, then his cheek looked pale, and on my face he turned an eye of death, trembling even at the name of Mortimer.
I cannot blame him. Was not he proclaimed by Richard the dead is the next of blood? But peace, cousin, say no more. And now I will unclasp a secret book, and to your quick-conceiving discontents I'll read you matter deep and dangerous, as full of peril and adventurous spirit as to walk a current roaring loud on the unsteadfast footing of a spear.
If he fall in, good night, or sink or swim. Send danger from the east unto the west, so honour cross it from the north to south, and let them grapple. Oh, the blood more stirs to rouse a lion than to start a hare.
Ambition of some great exploit drives him beyond the bounds of patience.
By heaven, methinks it were an easy leap to pluck bright honour from the pale-faced moon, or dive into the bottom of the deep where fathom line could never touch the ground and pluck up drowned honour by the locks. So he that doth redeem her thence might wear without carrival all her dignities, but out upon this half-faced fellowship.
He apprehends a world of figures here, but not the form of what he should attend. Good cousin, give me audience for a while.
Oh, I cry you mercy.
Those same noble Scots that are your prisoners.
Now, I'll keep them all. By God, he shall not have a Scot of them. No, if a Scot should save his soul, he shall not. I'll keep them by this hand.
Start away and lend no ear unto my purposes. Those prisoners you shall keep.
Nay, I will. That's flat. He said he would not ransom Mortimer. Forbade my tongue to speak of Mortimer. But I will find him when he lies asleep, and in his ear I'll holler, Mortimer! Nay, I'll have a starling so be taught to speak nothing but Mortimer, and give it him to keep his anger still in motion.
Hear you, cousin, a word.
All studies here I solemnly defy, save how to gall and pinch this Bolingbroke,
and that same sword and buckler, Prince of Wales. But that his father loves him not, and would be glad he met with some mischance at having poisoned with a pot of ale.
Very well, kinsman, I'll speak to you when you have better temper to attend.
Why, what a wasp-stung and impatient fool art thou! To break into this woman's mood, tying thine ear to no tongue but thine own.
Why, look you, I am whipped and scourged with rods, nettled and stung with pismires when I hear of this vile politician, Bolingbroke. In Richard's time, what do you call the place? Plague upon it, is in Gloucestershire. It was where the madcap duke his uncle kept. His uncle York. Where I first bowed mine ear to this king of smiles, this Bolingbroke. S'blood! When you and he came back from Ravenspur.
At Berkeley Castle.
Oh, you say true. Why, what a candy deal of courtesy this fawning greyhound then did proffer me. Look when his infant fortune came to age, and gentle Harry Percy, and kind cousin. Oh, the devil take such cousiners! God forgive me. Good uncle, tell your tale. I have done.
No, if you've not, to it again. We will stay your leisure.
I have done it, Faith!
And once more, to your Scottish prisoners. Deliver them out without their ransom straight, and make the Douglas son your only mean for powers in Scotland, which for divers reasons, which I shall send you written, be assured, shall easily be granted. Now you, my lord, your son in Scotland being thus employed, shall secretly into the bosom creep of that same noble prelate, the Archbishop.
Of York, is not
true, who bears hard his brother's death at Bristow, the Lord Scroope. I speak not this in estimation, as what I think might be, but what I know is ruminated, plotted, and set down, and only stays but to behold the face of that occasion that shall bring it on.
I smell it. Upon my life, it will do well.
Before the game is afoot, thou still lettest slip.
Why, it cannot choose but be a noble plot, and then the power of Scotland and of York to join with Mortimer.
And so they shall.
Upon my life, it is exceedingly well aimed.
It is no little reason but to speed, to save our heads, by raising of a head. For bear ourselves as even as we can, the king will always think him in our debt, think we think ourselves unsatisfied till he hath found a time to pay us home, and see already how he doth begin to make us strangers to his looks of love.
He does, he does. We'll be revenged upon him.
Cousin, farewell. No further go in this than I, by letters, shall direct your course. When time is ripe, which will be suddenly, I'll steal to Glendower and Lord Mortimer, where you and Douglas and our powers at once, as I will fashion it, shall happily meet, to bear our fortunes in our own strong arms, which now we hold at much uncertainty.
Farewell, good brother. We shall thrive, I trust.
Uncle, adieu. Oh, let the hours be short till fields and blows and groans applaud our sport.